You're listening to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
It is Tuesday morning.
It is.
It's still April.
Yes, it is.
April 24th.
For one more week. Next Tuesday is May 1st.
It is. Fantastic Share-a-thon.
Yeah, I'm still in like...
Share-a-thon glow.
Yeah.
You still have that afterglow from Share-a-thon.
Yeah. You turn the mics on and I'm like, it's Share-a-thon 2018. Oh, wait, no, it's not.
You can still participate in Share-a-thon 2018. You can still pledge your support of KFUO. You can do that. Give Mary a call at 314-996-1518. That's 314-996-1518 to pledge your support of KFUO. You can also text.
You can text.
41444 is the number to text. And then all you have to do is send a message of KFUO to that number, 41444.
It's really easy.
It is.
I don't know how many times I said that.
41444 is the number, and then text the word. The word is KFUO a word.
Call letters.
Yes. So send that to the number 41444 and make your gift right there on your phone. Super easy. Just a couple simple steps. Thanks to our friends at Concordia University, Wisconsin, as well for supporting the Coffee Hour on KFUO. Mm-hmm. The Coffee Hour. Speaking of Coffee Hour, what coffee do you have?
Honduras. Yeah, it's good. We almost finished our Sumatra from our Indonesian friend yesterday.
We also have coffee in studio for our in-studio guest today from our friends at Martin Luther High School in Northrop, Minnesota. I forgot which brew, the back sitting right by the coffee pot. It's the blue one.
It's the Mexican Sumatra blend.
Yeah. Yep. In studio with us today, Rachel Bomberger, managing editor of the Lutheran Witness and regular voice here on the Coffee Hour.
Hello.
Good morning. Good morning. The April issue of the Lutheran Witness has some deep stories. Always good stuff in the Lutheran Witness. But the story we're going to dig into today. Wow. How did you discover the work? This is the work of one of our missionaries in Papua New Guinea. And how did you uncover this story?
Yeah, well, because it's a small Lutheran world.
Really?
Yeah. I have lots of friends, especially on social media through the gift of Facebook. And I would recommend anyone to find and friend and follow our Lutheran missionaries around the globe, because you will expand your global horizons every day. Mm-hmm. But I've been friends with the missionary we'll be talking to, Anton Lutz, for a long time. And a couple years ago, I started noticing these stories popping up in his feed about Sangoma violence. And at first I thought, oh, he's just sharing, you know, an outrageous thing that happened the same way you would share a school shooting. You know, isn't this awful? But then as time went on, I noticed that these posts were a little more frequent and a little more personal. And I began to realize that there was some really important work going on over there with regard to violence toward women, men, even children, related to superstitious beliefs, and that he was really playing a role that deserved to be highlighted. And the story started getting picked up by secular news. And I thought, oh, if the Huffington Post can run this, the Lutheran Witness has got to cover this. And so I reached out to him, and turned out the story was even bigger and deeper than I had imagined.
Joining us via Skype now, Anton Lutz. He's serving the Lord in Papua New Guinea. Anton, thanks for joining us in the Coffee Hour. I know it's late for you, well past bedtime for you in Papua New Guinea. Thanks for having some time to share with us your story.
Not a problem. Good morning there to the three of you.
Tell us a little bit about your life in Papua New Guinea. Your life in Papua New Guinea didn't start just as an adult going there to serve as a missionary. Tell us a little bit about your history.
Yeah, so my parents came out here in 1986. I was just a little kid, and I grew up out here and went through grade school and then through high school as well. Went off to boarding school, as you know, the old missionaries do, and then So eventually I came back out here. My parents were still here, and I got involved in all kinds of different work. And then, my dad passed away a couple of years ago. My mom was still out here, and the work has been changing.
And the culture in Papua New Guinea is very different from the culture that we experience here in the United States. What is the role of fear and superstition? How does that permeate into the culture where you are?
Well, I think it's often considered a animistic society, and the things that I think fear is common across the whole planet, I guess, but the things that people fear can be quite different. So people around here will often fear ghosts or attribute sickness or death to another person or another spirit in the area. Whereas we would fear cancer, they would fear a spirit or a person even.
The article in this month's In the April Lutheran Witness, Tortured Silence, really, it just paints a picture for us. And as a matter of fact, there are images, there are photos included in the article that really help us, I think, understand the culture that in some ways is so much like our American culture, but in many ways very different. The violence that is associated with fear, violence as a result of fear. And it appears that your vocation has kind of emerged out of your life there of serving in a vocation of mercy, to step in and be that agent of mercy in times where that is needed, when there's a victim of violence or a potential victim of violence. It seems like you've been placed by God's hand, by the hand of providence, to be an agent of mercy. How is it that you are unique? Your station in life is unique, that gives you the opportunity to do that where others might not necessarily be able to step in and be an agent of mercy in those situations?
Well, I think it's a fantastic question, Andy. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I'm the one who's come back and build on the legacy of my parents. So, you know, the LCMS has been here in Papua New Guinea now for more than 70 years. But we have very few missionaries who have returned back. I should mention, we do have another one at the moment. We have Dr. Martin Dickey is here, and his father first came in the 1950s. But he himself has now been here as an adult for less than 2 years. Whereas I came here 30 years ago. And so when I'm standing up and talking, people are seeing the legacy of my father and the missionaries that came before me and even before him and so on. So I think that sort of it gives me the sense that it's my right to stand up and talk. It's certainly in all the areas where I live and where I travel, that people know who I am. And so when they see me coming, they know that, you know, it's not just any crazy white skin, as we say around here, but it's, you know, it's Dr. Steve's son. And so they know who I am, and they're not just going to put an axe in my head. So that gives me this confidence. Whether or not it's a false confidence, I'm not sure. But I also recognize that in this culture at this time, it's a very different experience to be a male than to be a female. And so there are many women who would love to be able to stand up and say the things I say, but because of the cultured, engendered stereotypes and the ways that women can't do what men can do for fear of violence and retaliation. So I know that's part of what's going on as well. So I think, you know, those are two of the big things, but I guess there's also, as you were saying, this emergent vocation that God has given me. And so, like, I in some sense can't help but get up and do these things. I feel compelled to do them, to go and speak, to go and try to help someone, or to try to rescue someone. It's something that I certainly would not choose to do. It's not fun and it's not easy, and it gives me nightmares, but I don't feel like I should stop doing it either.
When you come across these situations of violence, or when somebody calls you with something that's happening, how do you respond, and how are you able to bring the mercy of Christ specifically to these people and help the person or the family or the community work through such a terrible situation?
Well, I think it's different in every phone call that comes in. And often I will, if I don't know very much about the area or the people that it's affecting, I will start reaching out to others on my contact list who may have, you know, contacts in that area. So if I hear of something happening up in a such and such valley, I'll start calling the district bishop of the Lutheran Church, who may know pastors up there who may be near enough to walk over there, and start trying to say something. And so I start telling, you know, giving messages to people and telling them ideas of things they could say. And meanwhile, I'm also calling the police, and I'm also calling, you know, human rights defenders who are in the area, and so on. So it's in some sense, it's very much a like a prayer chain mm-hmm. type idea, that, you know, one person spreads the message to the next person. And so we have this sort of ad hoc network of people who can call each other. And then, of course, I'm sending, I don't know if you guys have this in the States, but over here we have prepaid phones. And so if you run out of money on your phone, you can't make phone calls. But you can send money to someone else's phone. So when I called someone, like say he's a policeman, and I say there's torture that's happening at such and such a place, can you call someone else and get back up and get in there? And he'll say, well, I don't have any money on my phone, so I can't make any calls. So then I'll basically transfer money from my phone to his phone. And then so I'll, in the course of an evening while we're trying to deal with the case or something, you know, I'll have sent out, you know, the equivalent of $50 worth of units to other people's phones so they can make phone calls too. And so it's sort of trying to get other people involved in what's happening, make them feel that they can do something and give them ideas of what they can do, and push them to do it, and then pull them back and remind them and ask them and follow up and all of that. And removing the obstacles where they might say, well, I don't know what to say, or I don't know what to do, or those kind of things. And it's just removing obstacles and trying to build this idea that it's unacceptable and we can all do something about it, and we have to do something about it, and we are going to do something about it. And sometimes it feels like it's, you know, my voice is the only one pushing that agenda, but more and more lately we're seeing other people stand up as well. So I feel like it's bearing fruit, I guess, and that's nice to see. And we just hope for the day that we won't have to be doing this in the middle of the night anymore.
Anton, thanks for taking some time out of your evening to share your story with us. I want to encourage our listeners to check out the story in the April issue of the Lutheran Witness, Tortured Silence. Anton Lutz, serving the Lord in Papua New Guinea, thanks so much for being our guest on the Coffee Hour.
No problem.
Rachel, we only have just a few seconds left, but why is it important to tell this story that often seems untold?
Well, this story is fascinating in itself, but I want to encourage readers not just to look at it and go, ooh, look at them going over there, because the same things that are contributing to Sangoma violence in Papua New Guinea, this fragmentation of society, this complex mix of social things happening, we see it here too. I love the quote that I included from Julie Lutz, Anton's mom. She says, turn your eyes to your own situation, not just praying for those people over there. We need to look at our own communities and see how can we be a light.
Check out the April issue of the Lutheran Witness. Rachel Bomberger, managing editor, thanks so much for being our guest on the Coffee Hour.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Coming up in just a little bit, we continue our series on wellness for our church workers, for ministry families. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
You're listening to the Coffee Hour.